Thank you so much for joining me on our next full-length episode of The Husky Huddle. And I am here with our assistant principal from the high school, Jennifer Palazuska.
Not bad on the pronunciation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's always it's a mouthful for everybody. Pałaszyńska.
Yeah. Got it. All right. So tell me a little bit about yourself and why you are the best Husky on our team.
I don't know if I'd want to claim the title of best. I'm a bit more modest than that. But anyways, so my background, and I know when we did the intros in the beginning of the year to the community, some of this information was in there, but throwing that back out there. I'm from West Seneca, New York, born in Buffalo, and education is actually my second career. Although it's been my second career for a long time, it's still my second career. I graduated out of Canisius College with a undergrad in German. Yes, go gross. But you can get away with majoring in German when you know you're going to be commissioned as an Army officer. So I was on an Army ROTC scholarship at Canisius and was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Army in 1996 and served 5 years in the regular Army, or was, you know, this active duty, full-time Army. There was a point that I decided to that I wanted to come back to my hometown of Buffalo and stay in the military in terms of being in the National Guard, which I was in for 12 and a half years. And then I've been in the reserves since January 2013. I continue to serve, and I'm a colonel in the reserves. But I got into education. So I went home, got a master's degree in history, and did my teaching certifications in then German and social studies, and worked at the Western New York Maritime Charter School for right place, right time, military background. I ended up there, and that's where I taught, and then worked my way into administration while I was there, and got my administrator coursework at Buff State, and just worked there for a number of years. And it was kind of a nice environment for me because I was able to, being a military environment school, I was able to blend. It was an easier transition, you know, from military life to civilian life, when it was like a half step transition. Nonetheless, there were still transitions that I had to do in terms of understanding how one builds and sustains culture with adolescents and youths as opposed to soldiers. I mean, you know, there's similarities, yet there's differences, right, as one would imagine. So there were some, you know, adjustments that I made in terms of that career. And my career there culminated with the where I spearheaded the building of the middle school project there, from grant to operating it for 4 years. And I decided then to put uniform on again full-time for a couple of years. So I resigned my position there because I didn't want to leave them shorthanded. And then coming off of my active duty orders, and I landed here in Olean. One of the things that I've always done in my, that I've always been proud of in my military career, is the ability to establish a healthy climate and culture at a unit, and establishing cultures that gear towards everybody understanding that they're a part of that group, and that group is successful, and they want to be part of a winning team. And that was something I was always had done pretty well at in the military. I was recognized in the New York Army National Guard for my ability to do that when I was in command in Jamestown, and was New York State's nominee for the MacArthur Leadership Award because of that. That translated into educational leadership, particularly in my time at Maritime, where I had to build an entire culture from scratch. And we were able to do so in short order. And those experiences really is what I wanted to bring to bear here at Olean, that ability to, through proactive, through present leadership, to be able to forge the right path towards a better culture in the school. There was a path that I did this. Now, I also taught Command and General Staff College. Sounds fancy, right? Kind of like the master's degree of the Army. I taught Command and General Staff College for some time as well. And a lot of what we taught, because we're teaching in that course, young field grade officers, which is like, think about like captains, like younger captains and brand new majors. We're teaching them how to do what we call a paradigm shift, a major change in how they view their role in the Army from that smaller level. Now they're getting to that organizational level, leadership level. So think of it like the difference between teacher and now we're getting to administration or building leader. And you have to view things differently. You have to view a much bigger picture. You have to understand organizational dynamics. You have to understand people. And this is a lot of what we taught in that course. And that really translates over pretty well into educational leadership. And as such, then I'd been informed of what not only my experiences, but those things that I taught. There's things out there like the Kotter organizational change model. And there's all these other, four models that come out of the business world and such that the military is using. And, education, any of these professions, adapt these things, these models and these theories on leadership into their profession. And so here I assessed, okay, I'm new to the school. Yeah, I'm walking in, right? And actually, I'm down in Texas when I get the call because I was out of town for a month or so. And I'm like, okay, so I'm new to the school. I'm an outsider, right? I'm not from the community. Yes, I'm from Western New York, but I'm not from the community down here in the Southern Tier. There's longstanding ways of doing things. This school's been here, and it's the central school, it doesn't seem like the same major flux of the focus of the community. This focus of the community has always been, okay, there's this high school.
Right.
Right. Even if there's been certain changes in the community and certain changes in the high school, it's always this. Right. Exactly. And there's staff that have been here for a very long time and some really good staff that have been here for a very long time. But nonetheless, been here for a very long time, long-standing ways of doing things. And I had come from a very different environment, being in a military-oriented charter school. And so I realized, okay, I'm the assistant principal, so I'm not going in as a principal even. But one of the worst things you can do, unless some place is in crisis mode, one of the worst things you can do is like you can't come in guns a-blazing and I'm going to change everything right away and look at me and you just make it even worse. So you step back, and I started out by just trying to understand the goals and intent of Mr. Andriano and then yourself. What are you trying to, what are your concerns? What are the longstanding goals? What are the goals of the board? And that was, if you recall, those were some of the first questions I was asking. Yeah. Because I wanted to be able to, what we call nesting within. So I want to I want to understand those goals so I can see what can I do at my level to help reinforce those goals. It might not be the exact same goals. Certainly won't be the same actions, but it'll be things that nest within and support into that like pyramid type. Coming to the tip of like, hey, this is what brings us all together and this is where we're going, focused on the mission of the school, focused on the vision of the school, and then with different goals and lines of effort that feed into that. And I wanted to understand that structure that I was walking into as much as possible before I did anything else. And then I observed, I learned, I assessed, I was looking back. What did I notice? What is effective? What isn't effective? What are areas I might want to shake up a little bit, when I get enough credibility to do so and enough understanding to do so? And that takes time. Typically, even like in a military command, and, I always go back onto my military service, but it really was foundational to, my professional life and who I am as an adult. And even as you come in like a commander to a military unit, again, unless something's in crisis mode or you're in some, high tempo environment or something, generally speaking, you take about the first 3 months, you don't do any major policy changes.
Right.
And that is in an environment where you only have so much time in command, mm-hmm. So it's the same here. I'm trying to just see what's going on, not trying to make too many changes, trying to get my face out there, being present, being around the building, talking to people. I'm not just observing passively. I'm engaging with students. I'm engaging with staff around the building. I'm engaging with not just teachers. I'm engaging with aides. I'm engaging with cafeteria staff. I'm engaging with the maintenance. I'm talking to people that are probably not even used to being talked to very often, particularly by, the school administration. I talked to everybody. It was like, and that was how I did with the military. I talked to privates. I was always a very present leader like that. And that was part of my ability to assess and learn was through that, just all the time, as much as I possibly could, being around the building, understanding what concerns are, gathering ideas, and quite frankly, building a coalition. So what you want to do is, and it's not, and that sounds like, you know, that could be misconstrued, like, oh, are you going to lead a coup or something, right? So building the coalition is to understand who in the building can be an agent for positive change, and who in the building is open to these processes, and who in the building could be cheerleaders for different initiatives that are, you know, as long as those initiatives are thought out well, and as long as they're they make sense and that kind of thing. But different people that you're like, okay, well, these are people that are gonna, when I'm not in the room, they might be like, hey, that was a really good idea that they did, or that's, hey, this stuff's going well, and understanding those dynamics, you know, around the building and in the organization. And that's part of like building that coalition, understanding.
Has that been difficult?
No.
Okay.
Good. No, I don't think so. There was a number of people that were, you know, I've gotten a lot of good feedback, you know, from various staff, and I know that there's even been times where I sat down with one teacher and I helped them work through a conflict they had with a student. They're like, wow, nobody's ever done that exactly that way with me before. I was like, well, it can work if the student's, you know, open to it and willing to be, you know, part of that actively and such, and different. So I'm not as hard as you would think. But then again, you know, we're also starting, you know, starting small. So,
right.
You know,
but hopefully those people who are part of that coalition can share with others.
Right. Yeah.
How effective it is.
And exactly.
Inspire others to join.
Exactly. You know, in terms of like, hey, let's get on board. This train's moving. These are some things that we can do. And to do that, a lot of times you want to generate, you know, we call it like grabbing the low hanging fruit. So are there things that need to be improved that can, with a few couple tweaks, can maybe be improved pretty readily?
Yeah.
And are they likely to be successful? Right. And if you can generate those short term goals that you can accomplish and show near-term victories, that helps strengthen and build that coalition.
Right.
And it gives people confidence in what's happening. And then they feel like that can help with morale. And it feels like, hey, things are moving in, you know, a better direction here, a better direction there. And that was part of what I had, you know, focused on. And that's when I, you know, had done things where I saw there's too many students in the hall.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What are some things we can do within normal, you know, like, completely, you know, run-of-the-mill school kind of pass control, like things that, you know, any school would do. How can we tighten that up to help this issue, to make some of the environment better? And, you know, so we executed on that in the January timeframe. And, you know, I know some parents in the community and stuff will remember when we pushed out, hey, these are some things we're doing here because we want to tighten some things up. That's what that was about, and about making sure, trying to help have students in the class more often, and you know, not in the hallways, and more better safety and better control. And it's not that hard to do.
Yeah. And was that hard to get across?
I don't think it was really hard to get across. There is a certain segment of students who don't like that. They're a little more restricted. I think there's more students that would like to be a little bit less restricted, but they go along because they're good students, and then yeah. And then they realize, oh, wait a minute. Oh, maybe this isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I mean, but there is a small segment of students who's who have other difficulties as well, who, you know, anytime they're questioned, like, hey, do you have a pass, or where were you supposed to be? They get defensive about it.
Yeah.
You know, which is part of why I put in the training that I had asked the first period teachers to do across the building when we were rolling this out to the students. One of the bullets I put in there is like, teachers, you know, students, part of your responsibility is understanding that teachers should be questioning where you're supposed to be, and that there's no reason to get defensive about it.
Right.
You know, but there are, you know, a certain segment of students that I think, you know, because they've had difficulties in school for years, probably they get defensive because, well, they're always garnering a little bit of negative intention, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wonder if they've ever had it explained to them. This is, the dynamic, and here's why. I wonder if this is truly the first time.
And I've done, you know, when I do the levy the discipline around the building, I do my best to try to make sure the students understand.
Yeah.
And they may not be even receptive at that moment. So sometimes I follow up like, hey, remember when I was talking to you? You got the detention. Yeah. Do you understand why?
Right.
And then when they're like, well, no, not really. Let's talk about that real quick. You know, let's walk and talk. I got to go to the next kid. I try to do that as much as I can. And you know, I think part of that is because that's what my parents did with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were, I remember like my dad told me that when I was very little, I was a very stubborn and very headstrong little kid, and that, like, you know, if he gave me a little smack on the butt, I would just look at him with this like look of like, you know, like just, yeah, like, and he found, oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It worked with my older brother. It doesn't work with me.
Yeah.
You know, and then he said, oh, but when we would explain something to you, this is why, and you'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that partly influenced why, you know, what I do here is in terms of trying to explain that to the students. Try to communicate these incremental changes to parents, staff, students, attain those short-term progress, and then continue to be present as leader.
Yeah.
Taking an interest in students and staff while promoting accountability, being out and about. I told you that sometimes there's things I would like to look at more, and I can't because I've got to focus on helping to build that culture out in the building. And that takes time. But I think it's important.
Yes.
And trying to get the culture onto the track that we want, where it's a culture focused on classroom learning, ultimately, and being part of that. If you don't have that in place, all the other initiatives that you might possibly try, they're going to have limited effectiveness.
Right.
You've got to get those basics down to make sure that you have a well-functioning school. Focused on the classroom and being in the classroom to be able to then bring things to the next level, because otherwise you'll be spinning your wheels. And that's why, you know, culture was a big focus. And I know that's a lot of what I talked about when I came in the interviews and such.
Yeah.
So I've been doing my best trying to do that, you know, and continue to try to do that.
Well, great feedback, and that's fantastic. And it's good to hear kind of the thought process behind it, because when this is shared, then people realize it's part of a larger systemic effort, and it's not just working from the gut. It's just, look, we're trying to set these things in place so that, you know, we have a safe, high-performing school environment for our students and
right.
staff.
And I think sometimes that, you know, yes, my military background definitely influenced me, but it is, you know, it has been tailored appropriately to the world of education. And it's not about being controlling. It's not about,
right.
oh, I'm going to exercise military discipline or anything like that. It's about trying to set the best environment for the students so they have the best opportunity for success in their lives.
Yeah.
Because for them to be successful, their job here is to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Above all.
Yeah.
Their job is to learn, be able to set themselves, and learning not just you know, the reading, writing, arithmetic, as we say, but learning how to properly function within a democratic Republican society, which requires an active, educated populace to vote intelligently, however it is that they will vote,
yeah.
but to be engaged and to be good citizens and understand how a society should function well. These are things they should know for, you know, for our country to continue on, which, you know, I will admit, this is part of my driver. I have a deep love, as one would imagine, for my country and for my community. And having a well-functioning schools is vital to us sustaining those things. And we all make mistakes along the way. Students, staff, administrators, we all make mistakes along the way trying to do that. But that focus is really to try to get improve our community, improve our country by making success possible for the students as best as we can.
And that is a key function of public education. You're absolutely right. It's a cornerstone to prepare our next wave of topics for them, that huge role of sustaining democracies. I was going to ask, so we got feedback from a lot of parents who wanted a lot of things like, you know, additional things in place to help ensure the safety of the students in the building. Have you had any tension from those parents who don't quite understand what we're doing systemically to address their concerns, but also to make sure that, you know, it's done equitably and it's done in a way that is fair and it's also in alignment with our policies and expectations of the building?
So generally not. Generally, there's not really been pushback. There was a gentleman who asked for an audience just to get some more clarification. And when I explained to him, you know, what I was, you know, what the intent was behind, he's like, oh, that makes sense. And that's exactly what you should be doing. There have been, there's been a couple of instances, say for like cell phones, where, and I would imagine maybe the parents are younger. And they're used to, you know, they may have had phones from an earlier age as well. And they're used to having that ability to have their children right there with the phone. And it just seems second nature to always have a phone with them. And sometimes if their student got, you know, disciplined for like, oh yeah, they have their phone during the day, so they're going to have a detention. Sometimes in that conversation, the parents will be like, wow, and you'll hear them question a little bit. And I think that is, you know, there is a certain level of generational thing to that. I mean, you know, when I went to high school, there was one payphone.
Or you
go to the office, right? And when we were, you know, growing up, we would, you know, go out from, you know, dawn till dusk and, you know, actually come back for dinner or something. And
when the street lights.
And then nobody can, you know, nobody's contacting you at all. And you used to have to use the payphone to try, hey, I need a ride. And that was, so I think there is, you know, there is a little bit of a generational difference in terms of what they're used to. But the research really shows, and in my personal experience of the years at Maritime, it's better not having the cell phones for the students for multiple reasons. And I know there was a number of parents in the community that they wanted that as well. And it does. And it's, you know, it's funny about that. From, you know, what I had heard, been hearing, you hear it from students as well. Sometimes they're reluctant to admit it, but they're like, it's really better. I wish I had my phone. But it's better in the classroom, right? In the classroom, we're not, people aren't pulling the phones out all the time and and getting on them and distracting the class or distracting themselves. And then students are actually talking with each other more.
Especially at lunch.
Like
everybody talks about, that's just been a great equalizer in the cell phone policy, that you can go to lunch and you can observe students talking with their peers, with their friends, and with staff that are in the room. And before, that was not happening at all. So it's good to see that.
Before, it looked like a Starbucks or something.
Where everybody's hunched over a device, kind of shoveling the food in, and you know, then the bell rings and they're off to the next with the phone in front of them.
You know, and it's funny too, because that's important for culture too, because then they start to, sometimes you might get conflict out of it as well, but they start to congeal, you know, as like a, hey, we're all people here. Oh, wait a minute, we're all students here. Oh, we're all Huskies here. We're all part of this. So look at that. And it, that can help for that sense of like, you know, what they're a part of. So that is part of the puzzle, you know, one piece of the puzzle there for helping to build a culture.
Okay, so is there anything else that you'd like to mention on the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
So last night I went to the section championship, right? I went there and I was very embarrassed because my children were cheering for Williamsville South. Because that, of course, is the school that they're going to go to. We live within a half mile of that school. So I was like, Vincent, you don't have to be obnoxious about it.
That's right. That's right. Did you make them sit on the other side?
No.
Oh.
No, I had them with me.
Okay. Because we first came in and we realized quickly we were in the wrong side of the arena. So we all moved on the other side.
Oh, I sat behind the bench.
Yeah. Yeah. We were eventually there too.
Yeah.
First, we were on the other side. It was like, no, we can't. Last
night.
Yeah.
Last night, yeah. Yeah. Doing it there. Yeah.
And I thought the Huskies did a great job. They did. They played with their heart and they went out there and they have absolutely everything to be proud of.
Yeah.
They did a great job.
You know, some of the Williamsville players, there was more size there.
Yeah.
They were all, you know, on the average, they were all taller players.
Yeah. We had Husky heart.
That's right. It definitely, then, you know, that causes an uphill battle a little bit, you know, with the size, pure size.
Yeah.
Then you saw things like, you know, Dwayne Motley, some of the plays that he made when he went in and it was, you know, and he's not super tall, but he just like, he's got some skill and he's driven.
Yeah.
You know, he's driven.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's, but that was, you know, that was interesting, but I did, especially Vincent, my son, Vincent, he was very, very vocal about, you know, okay. He tried to keep my hands from clapping when we would score a basket.
No.
He'd be like, you can't do that.
Like, no, you gotta sit over there. Yeah. With us.
They go to Mill Middle.
So, oh, okay.
Which is, so yeah, and they're gonna, that's Dominic's in sixth grade and Vincent's in fifth.
Yeah.
Sophia wasn't there. She's in fifth as well.
Yeah.
And so they're getting ready to, you know, not too much longer, they'll be at the high school.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to engage with trash talking with the Williamsville superintendent there.
Oh,
and,
did you?
But he has a lot more muscles than I could even understand. So he was able to say, no, we're going to win. I was like, no, you're not. We're going to win. And it doesn't matter who wins. We're Huskies and you will never be a Husky. So that was my attempt at trash talk. That's as good as I can.
Very dignified.
I got to work on it.
Okay. Keep your dignity. Right? No, that's the important part.
You're a Huskies in it. Okay. Well, I appreciate this. This has been fantastic.